welcome to International Edition, where we take a closer look at stories of the day, social media, and entertainment. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, a U.S. telephone surveillance program expires. The possibility of teaching absolute pitch. Tips on protecting your mobile device from cyber spies.
You know, increasingly we spend a lot of our digital lives, so it's just more important than ever to learn some techniques about how to guard your mobile phone and your tablet.
And a rap song wins, stirs up controversy, coming up right here on The Voice of America. The U.S. National Security Agency has lost the legal authority to collect telephone records after the Senate failed to agree Sunday on an extension of several provisions put in place following the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. The once-secret program that collected information such as the phone numbers, date, and duration of calls to try to thwart suspected terrorists drew criticism from Americans who said it violated their privacy. VOA's Steve Norman spoke about the Senate's inaction with correspondent Michael Bowman.
Steve, the Senate was facing a real conundrum in that it had not acted at all as far as the National Security Agency's ability to collect Americans' telephone records for the fight against terrorism. The House had voted to reform the program and to have all Americans' telephone records kept by telecommunications companies, in other words, under corporate server control rather than the government's servers. But the Senate had not acted at all. And without some action by Congress to reform the program, the U.S. government was facing the possibility that no telephone records at all were going to be kept by any entity whatsoever. And the Obama administration had warned that that would cause a real potential problem in terms of defending the nation. So the Senate was really under the gun. Both houses of Congress were in recess this past week. The Senate came back a day early, and moments before the midnight expiration of this program, the Senate voted to begin debate on the House-passed bill. This is a bill that the Senate had rejected just over a week ago, and the Senate's Republican majority leader had held out, hoping that the Senate would vote to extend the NSA's snooping abilities, if you will. But that did not hold, and so now the Senate has voted to at least consider the House bill, and that is expected to go to final passage possibly later today, Monday, or if not Tuesday.
You know, Michael, we've been at this juncture before on a number of issues where the lawmakers just don't know what to do, it seems. Is that another one of those cases where the Senate is just so completely divided that they can't move forward?
It's not that they don't know what to do. It's that there are different factions that have very different ideas about what should be done. For Mitch McConnell, he would have wanted the existing program, the program that the NSA had for years, to continue. There was another faction that wanted it reformed, that wanted those phone records to still be kept, but just not under the government's control. Then you have a third faction that does not think that the bulk collection of telephone records in any capacity is something that should be done in a country that values civil liberties and the privacy of individual Americans. So there was this gridlock in Congress, and specifically in the Senate. The House had voted overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis to embrace the reform proposal, what's called the USA Freedom Act. But it was really in the Senate, which has been called the world's greatest deliberative body, where things were falling apart. Now it seems that the two houses of Congress, both under Republican control, are at least on the same page. So some might say that that at least constitutes some form of progress.
Well, whatever happens with the USA Freedom Act, it likely will not come easy, will it?
Well, it could come easy if the Senate goes ahead and votes within the next day or two. Then the House bill will have been passed, and it will go to President Obama's desk for his signature. I should say that it's not entirely clear how this will play out from a national security perspective. If you have these telephone records kept by private telecommunications companies, will that make it more difficult for the federal government to monitor things and to keep on top of possible terrorist plots? Could there be possible security breaches if these phone records are kept by telecommunications companies? The way forward is a bit murky, and how this will play out from a national security perspective and from a civil liberties perspective remains to be seen.
Correspondent Michael Bowman. Joining me here in the studio is reporter Andrew Palchevsky with a look at what is being said today in social media. Andrew, what do you have to share?
Well, we have a few stories from the U.S. First, sad news that we heard over the weekend. Beau Biden, who's the son of Vice President Joe Biden, passed away this weekend at age 46 after battling brain cancer. People have been taking to social media to offer their condolences to the Biden family from his home state of Delaware and around the world. Another U.S. story actually that has global implications. Secretary of State John Kerry also sadly fell while he was biking in Switzerland this weekend after talks on the Iran nuclear negotiations and broke his leg. And he's on his way back now to the U.S. to have surgery. He's going to be out of commission for a while, so that could impact the Iran nuclear negotiations and other of his activities around the world. I think I read that he had been over 350 days traveling around the world since taking office as Secretary of State, so a very busy schedule that comes to a halt, at least for a little while. And another entertainment news here in the U.S., big news on Twitter, Kim Kardashian of the Kardashian family expecting child number two, everyone taking to Twitter to congratulate her. And very quickly, the French Open is going on right now, and I want to bring up something interesting. Maria Sharapova, the defending champion on the women's side, lost this morning. Sharapova was the trending topic worldwide, but in the United States, it was Lucy Safarova, the woman who beat her. So interesting dynamic between the global and U.S. trends there.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your insight, Andrew. You're tuned to VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Among the talents most desired by musicians is the ability of absolute pitch. Absolute or perfect pitch has been described as a person's ability to accurately identify a musical note just by hearing it. It's thought that less than one person out of 10,000 people has this incredibly rare skill. It was also believed that absolute pitch could only be developed during a short period of time in early childhood and that it was impossible for adults to acquire this coveted skill. But recently, a team of psychologists from the University of Chicago said that they actually taught some adults to develop absolute pitch and maintain the skill for a number of months afterwards. The researchers also said, however, that they couldn't determine whether the ability of absolute pitch taught to their adult subjects is as good as the rare and true perfect pitch. And that's your science in a minute.
China's capital, Beijing, has begun imposing its strongest smoking ban in history. The restriction went into effect today, covers indoor and some outdoor public places, including offices, shopping malls, restaurants, close to schools, hospitals, and sports venues, as well as airports. Fines for violators have been increased by 20 times, while businesses in violation could have their licenses revoked. Dolly Yang, a political science professor at the University of Chicago, has just returned from the Chinese capital and says smoking is a simmering national crisis in China.
There are just a huge number of people, estimated at around 300 million people who are smokers in China. And of course, the long calls of that smoking population are beginning to show because people had various diseases, but especially lung cancer. So this particular ban only applies to the city of Beijing, so it's not a national ban. And my sense is that actually in recent years, the Chinese government has launched a variety of efforts. For example, they really successfully dealt with drunken driving in recent years. So there is a lot of experience with this. But smoking is a little harder. Number one, so sort of many people feel like it's a personal issue. And also, when you only apply it to one city, then a lot of people from the outside come in, so there are bound to be some tensions. But overall, though, I don't have a doubt, actually, that this would be fairly successful within Beijing, simply because already there are various regulations governing official behavior and so on, whether it's car use or dining and smoking ban. In fact, the Chinese officials are big smokers, actually, sometimes ignoring regulations. But now they really have to set an example.
According to the state-run China Daily, the tax on cigarettes more than doubled last month from 5% to 11%. Beijing residents can make use of a hotline to report violators. Global Times estimates more than 1 million Chinese die annually from ailments linked to smoking. Well, you're tuned to International Edition on the Voice of America. Why not stop by our website sometime at voanews.com? We'll be right back after this short break.
I'm Artie Johnson. Here's what's happening around the world. The U.S. National Security Agency has lost the authority to collect telephone records after the Senate failed to agree Sunday on an extension of several provisions put in place following the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. A new law already passed by the House of Representatives would modify the program to allow the NSA to request data from phone companies on a case-by-case basis, but not collect it on its own. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said late Sunday the Senate needs to act quickly to address what he called an irresponsible lapse. A spokesman for Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza said today the government will consider a request from East African leaders to postpone this month's presidential elections. Protests have led to violence that critics say is against his third term request to run for a third term. Qatar has agreed to temporarily extend travel restrictions on five senior Taliban leaders released last year from the U.S. detention center at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba in return for a captured U.S. soldier. I'm Marty Johnson.
Coming up on International Edition, cyber spies out to tap your phone, and an Iggy Azalea song stirs up trouble. Much has been written over the years about the necessity of computer users to be proactive if they want to guard their privacy and keep their machines clean of viruses. But as the use of mobile phones and other devices has skyrocketed, surveys show that users have often failed to transfer these precautions to the mobile digital environment, leaving millions vulnerable. Well, VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard is here, and he's got that look. Doug,
hi, Susan.
I think I hear another cyber scolding coming from you.
You know, every time I come in here, it feels like I'm hectoring you, you know, talking about web hygiene. But, you know, these things are obviously important. Running antivirus, keeping your programs updated, good passwords, that sort of thing. The problem is that people have failed to take those practices into the mobile environment where, you know, increasingly we spend a lot of our digital lives. So it's just more important than ever to learn some techniques about how to guard your mobile phone and your tablet.
So how do we do that?
Well, the first best place to start is with the device itself. So if you look at phones, the three most popular operating systems, Google Android, Apple's iOS, and the Microsoft Windows Phone, they all now offer encryption as default. Now, you don't have to encrypt your phone, but I would strongly recommend people consider encrypting their phone. Basically, what that means is you create some kind of passcode, and all the information in your phone, all your pictures, your contacts, all that stuff, is encrypted. You put the passcode in, you can get it. But if somebody steals your phone and they don't have that passcode, they can't get it either. They can't get into it. It really is permanently locked. So it's a good first place to start, I think.
Well, you know, I'm kind of not really good with a computer. You know that.
I don't know that I would say it that way.
Is this going to be hard for somebody who's a dunce like me to do?
It's not hard, but I think the key thing is you can't have a very easy passcode like 123. That's meaningless. But also, it has to be a passcode that's not so complex that you can actually remember it. So somewhere in the middle there, you can find a middle ground, I think.
And you're going to tell me don't write it down.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Don't write it down.
Well,
you've been listening.
Yes, I have. Every time you tell me that. So is encrypting the phone enough?
No. Let's go the next space to actually how you connect in that mobile environment. Many people are familiar and use what's called Wi-Fi. You know, you're out at a shop or a mall or that kind of thing, and you open your phone, and it will appear on your phone. Oh, there are networks available. The you can use Wi-Fi, but you're strongly recommended not to use what are called free open networks. Very often, I think even McDonald's offers this now in my neighborhood. It's a free open network. Anybody with a mobile can just hop right on without a passcode. The problem is those systems are so incredibly insecure that anybody in that open network can, if you're on it, they can, it doesn't take much at all. They can pop into your phone, they can snoop around, they can delete files, they can put in malware. So if you're going to connect in a mobile environment, don't use that open free Wi-Fi unless it's absolutely necessary.
Are people not being more careful because they're lazy, or why aren't they not watching themselves?
I think they're being less careful because they're simply really not aware. You know, you pop onto a network, an open network, and you see how convenient it is. You can get directions, you can go to Yelp, do whatever you want. But what they're not seeing is how easy it is also for the bad guys to use those open networks to get into your phone or your tablet and, you know, create all kinds of havoc.
Well, I'm glad you're not a bad guy.
Not yet.
It would scare me with all your knowledge. Okay, thank you very much. That's VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard right here in our Washington studios. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Some rap fans didn't think Australian-born Iggy Azalea's song Fancy should have won the Billboard Award for Best Rap Song. Here is VOA's David Byrd.
First things first, I'm the realest. Drop this and let the whole world feel it.
Let them feel it.
Iggy Azalea's pop rap tune, Fancy, has gathered all kinds of awards. It's made her all kinds of money. But it's also gotten her in a little bit of controversy. There was a petition to have her Billboard award revoked. To find out why and to talk more about this, I'm joined by Shauna Renee. Shauna, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
This controversy, first of all, Iggy Azalea is an Australian who has emigrated to the United States.
Correct.
She had a very, very popular hit. Every time you turned on pop radio, you heard Fancy.
Mm-hmm.
She was given the Billboard Award this year, for that song. But apparently there was some controversy and there was actually a petition to revoke her award.
Yes. Well, she received the 2015 Billboard Music Award for Top Rap Song. And a group of fans, Nicki Minaj fans, signed or created a petition on change.org. And they argue that the song was released a month before the eligibility date. So in order for a song to be eligible for an award, the production company or whoever's hosting the award will say, well, from this date to this date, the song must have been released. Well, as it turns out, the song was released in enough time. It just hadn't hit the top 100 here in the United States in enough time. So technically, she was still eligible for the award. But there were over 20,000 signatures, people who thought that Nicki Minaj's Anaconda should have won the award.
Now, is this just sour grapes? Or, you know, Billboard basically said, look, it's our award and we'll give it to who we want to, right?
Well, and exactly. And they said, more importantly, it followed the rules. It was released within the time that it should have been. But you cannot ignore the fact that any time Iggy Azalea comes up in the hip-hop or rap community, that there are some cultural and racial undertones. So sour grapes, perhaps, on the part of Nicki Minaj fans who thought that Nicki specifically should have received the award. But there's been a lot of talk about whether or not Iggy Azalea is authentically hip-hop or authentically rap, whether or not she deserves a rap award versus, let's say, a pop award.
This is kind of a controversy that's been brewing for a while, though, because there's been a lot of pop rap songs, but they're not necessarily hip-hop songs, right?
Well, yeah, and it's kind of interesting and difficult to determine what is what. But there's been a lot of discussion, not only about the way a song sounds, but who's actually producing it. We saw this very same controversy sort of rear its head around the Grammys a couple of years ago when Macklemore and Ryan ended up winning a ton of hip-hop or rap awards. And there were questions about whether or not they are actually rap. They represent the genre. And you have to remember, here in the States, when you talk about rap, it's not just the music, it's the culture that goes along with it. And that's where people are a little unsure.
All right, that's Shauna Renee. And if you would like to learn more about this, log on to our website. That's www.voanews.com. You can also catch Shauna in the Soul Lounge. She's on that same website, voanews.com. Shauna, thank you.
Thank you so much.
If you'd like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner and then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Yet another Bangladeshi blogger has been hacked to death, the third such murder since February. Onanta Bijoy Dash was killed on May 12th as he left his home on his way to work at a bank. Four masked men attacked him, hacking him to death with cleavers and machetes, according to Sylhet police. Dash's death comes on the heels of the March murder of Vashikur Rahman and the February slaying of Bangladesh-born American blogger Avijit Roy. Mr. Rahman was hacked to death by two men with knives and meat cleavers just outside his house in the capital of Dhaka. Mr. Roy was similarly killed with machetes and knives as he walked back from a book fair in Dhaka. Dash was an atheist who contributed to Mukat Mona, or Free Thinkers, the blog founded by Mr. Roy. Bloggers on the site tend to be critical of Islamic fundamentalism, and many champion reason and science. In the last 2 years in Bangladesh, several bloggers have died, either murdered or died under mysterious circumstances. In 2014, Reporters Without Borders reported that a group known as Defenders of Islam in Bangladesh had published a hit list of writers it saw as opposing Islam. Nine on the list of 84 have already been killed, and many others have been attacked. According to Human Rights Watch Asia Director Brad Adams, this pattern of vicious attacks on secular and atheist writers not only silences the victims, but also sends a chilling message to all in Bangladesh who espouse independent views on religious issues. The United States condemns these attacks in the strongest terms. These are acts of cowardice. Real ideas do not require violence to defend them. We stand with the people of Bangladesh as they strive to protect the country's proud tradition of free thought and discussion.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.